You're listening to a DayOne.fm show.
As a startup founder, you're juggling multiple priorities, from the expected, like finding product market fit, to the unexpected, like customer requests for SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification.
But achieving compliance is time consuming, and time spent on it is time away from the needs of the business.
That's where Vanta comes in. Vanta is the all-in-one solution for startups to become compliant quickly and build a security foundation with ease.
With a combination of automation, an extensive partner network, and a security marketplace, Vanta provides the necessary tools and expertise for startups to achieve compliance seamlessly, no matter how urgent the needs are and at every phase of growth.
Over 10,000 leading companies, including CipherStash, Handle, and Indebted, trust Vanta to automate compliance so they can focus on growing their business.
Startup customers get 10% off Vanta at dayone.fm/Vanta/first check, or just go to the link in the show notes.
Hey, Maxine, quick question. Do you like birds? And what about cyber? Do you struggle with that?
Birds, yes. Cyber, well, it's complicated. But lucky for us, that's where Galahr Cyber swoops in.
Galahr Cyber is perfect whether you're a founder looking for practical security advice or an investor needing solid risk management for your portcos.
So if you want to secure your business and join a flock that is unlike most security firms, head over to dayone.fm/Galahr for your free conversation with Cole, who can set you off in the right direction.
Okay, 3, 2, 1.
Hey, I'm Cheryl.
I'm Maxine.
This is First Check, part of Day One, the network dedicated to founders, operators, and investors.
If you want to be a better early stage investor, this is the show for you.
So TLDR, if you don't want to suck at investing, listen up.
We did this last year. We're doing it again this year. It is the yearly wrap up and future predictions. This year, of course, we are going to be talking about 2024, what happened, what we saw, all the things from start to finish, from New Year's Day last year to today, which is the 28th. So if something happens tomorrow after this and we don't include it, please don't come at us. And we'll also be talking about what we think might or may not. We'll be making some predictions for 2025. Maxine, you excited?
I'm so excited. Also, we should say it's the 28th of November. So if December is a complete bomb site, we had no idea that was happening. So you're probably listening to this in December. Don't kill us if something really bad happened. But I am so excited to do a recap on the year. My summary of the year is woof. That was intense.
I think that was your summary last year too.
I think maybe that's just going to be my summary for every single year from here on out. Just like, oh my God, woof. But no, I think it was a cracker of a year. I think I was listening back to our prediction section of our 2023 wrap up.
Ooh, what did we get right?
Can I just say they were tame? We need to be more spicy with our predictions this year.
Okay.
But I'm excited to dive in. So do you want to kick us off? What happened this year?
I thought we were going to start with like our predictions.
Oh no, you got to build into it.
No, I meant like comparing our predictions from last year to like, did we get it right? Did we, you know, did we nail it?
Oh, I mean, look, to be honest with you, our predictions were so vanilla that I think they could have been right in any direction. The main summary of our prediction is like, we were cautiously optimistic. Risk appetite would build slowly over the course of the year. We would see slightly more M&A. It was mainly qualifying words.
Which it has, and it has.
It has, and which you could probably apply to every single year since venture was invented in like 1690. So, you know, I don't think they count as predictions.
Except for 2021.
True. The 2020 and 2021, the ZIRP era was an aberration by all sense of the imagination. But I think we got it right. Asterisk, right? And the asterisk is, like, we put so many qualifiers around it, I don't know that we could have actually been held accountable to it.
Like ChatGPT probably could have gotten it right too.
True.
Although I think this is the year that, like, for me, this was the year that I started using ChatGPT. Like, it feels like I've had it in my life for a very long time, but actually it has not been that long.
Did you just say ChatGPT?
Yeah, did I not?
GPT? GTP. Grand Theft Auto? GTA. Wait, where are we?
What is happening right now? Did I get the letters wrong?
Yeah, GPT, not GTP.
I was close enough.
Wait, how long? I'd have to know for a moment. How long have you been out there in the world referencing ChatGPT?
You know, you're the first one who has ever corrected me. And I'm going to say, like, it felt natural for me to say it that way. So I'm going to say probably a while.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. We should do like a retro of all of your publicly recorded like panels and podcasts and just do like a summary of all of the chat DTPs. Or actually, Sam Altman, if you're listening, Cheryl has actually rebranded your product. So it's chat DTP from now on. If you wouldn't mind just changing all your branding, we'd appreciate it.
I would appreciate that, actually.
Right. Me too. Me too. I would be wowed by the true sense of the word.
Okay. So, I mean, I think we definitely saw this year, like, risk appetite coming back on.
Oh, 100%.
Which I know we, like, largely predicted. Like, one of the examples is that while we had a whole ton of investment in Q1 of this year, like, $700 million, there were very few deals relatively. So there's only, like, 60 deals that happened in Q1. Whereas this quarter, the last quarter that we're referencing, like, Q3 of this year, for anyone who is trying to keep track, we saw about the same, like around 700 mil, but over 100, I think it's 120 deals. So that's double the number of deals, which tells me that we are seeing a lot more risk appetite at the earlier stages, right? Like smaller deals equals earlier stage companies, which means there are more early stage companies getting funded.
Right. Yeah. And I definitely felt that out there. I'm sure you were probably the same. Like it was busy. It felt really, really busy at seed and pre-seed and awesome companies, like some really, really cool companies being built, some incredible teams coming together to go and chase some like big, hairy, audacious missions. And so exciting to kind of to see that happen. Although it wasn't a slight uptick from last year, right? But not a huge progression. I know in the US we're definitely up on 22 and 23, but it's incremental and continues to be incremental growth. I thought it was really interesting, though. It's actually significantly higher than 2019. So like the ZERP era is obviously a massive aberration, but if you kind of draw the line from 2019 to 22, 23, and now 24, it's pretty significant growth in a kind of linear fashion. It's not exponential, which I think is interesting because we have a pretty solid narrative that we're hearing out there in the market, which is like, you know, we're still having a correction. The market's still kind of recovering, but the data says that it's above where it was in 2019, which at the time was the local maximum.
We're also above where we were in 2023. So like that concept that like investor sentiment is rebuilding from the crash, if you want to call it, in 2022, at the end of 2022, that concept that investor sentiment is rebuilding absolutely makes sense. We are seeing a steady trend upwards from 2023, like where we are above. I think I predicted at some point, maybe not in the podcast, we might need to revisit this, but someone asked me last year, like where I thought we would land in terms of total venture capital in Australia. And we did about 3.5 last year. And my prediction for this year is that we'd land around 4. And as of September of this year, we were sitting at 3. So that we would do another $1 billion before the end of the year, like in this quarter, to me feels about right.
Amazing. I mean, you didn't predict it on the podcast, so on the pod or it didn't happen. You gotta put it on this one this year. If you're gonna be making hot takes for where we're gonna get to by the end of 25.
Okay. I will. I 100% will.
It's got to be on the pod or it didn't happen.
All right.
But I think, I mean, that's pretty impressive, right? That's a pretty significant amount of capital behind innovation, behind, you know, the tech ecosystem in the Australian market in that period of time. So that's super exciting. Same thing in the US, right? We saw overall capital allocated went up, round valuations went up, round sizes went up, everything went up. We're not talking about like huge percentages here, but they are all material uptick. So I think I feel validated in that our sentiment that it would kind of continue to rebuild, but slowly over time was the right thing. And I think that that's still going to be true, but you have to continue to listen to our hot takes at the end. I'm not going to give you one while we're in the middle of it.
Yeah, I'm not calling it now, team. You got to wait till the end. We got to get spicy. We're going to get spicy. All right. So what else happened this year, Maxine?
What else happened? We saw kind of on that theme of recovery in the market, we saw some really exciting liquidity come back into the market. Obviously, there's been an enormous amount of just kind of beating the drum of liquidity. LPs are asking for it. Investors, kind of angel investors are asking for it. Founders are asking for it.
I think it's like every second conversation I have.
Yeah, yeah. It's honestly, if I have to hear the word liquidity one more time, I think I'm going to barf. But I think it's, you know, something that we're all really focused on.
I'm surprised you can still pronounce it.
Yeah, I think maybe that's going to be my tactic. I'm just going to pretend like I can't pronounce it from here on out so I don't have to have the conversation with people about it.
Liquidity.
So Canva put just over 800 million back into the ecosystem through their secondaries, which the majority of that, I think, actually came back to the Australian ecosystem because a lot of them were early investors. And then obviously through Blackbird Fund 1, Bugcrowd had a liquidity event and so distributed capital back into the ecosystem. We also had a lot of M&A. Obviously, Canva went on a bit of a tear.
Instacluster.
We saw me and you and Mr. Yum merge. And so that was cool to see. Although I wouldn't have minded to see more of that. The Australian ecosystem, when it comes to M&A, is pretty anemic. I would love to see more great Australian businesses buying innovative startups and getting the benefit of the products that they're building, the kind of distribution they're able to get. The US obviously is the high watermark of doing this really well. Europe is okay at it, but Australia could definitely pick up its socks there.
I think it's important to note that early stage M&A was at an all-time high this year.
Oh, interesting.
Which is exciting, right? Like it's heading up.
That's wonderful to hear. I think if anyone's listening to this and they're like looking for a business to start and they come from investment banking, please, please, please start a boutique consultancy or a boutique M&A shop so that you can help Australian companies buy great Australian tech companies. There is so much opportunity there. I just wish that that existed, especially for like early stage, as you said, right? I would love to see more of that.
Do you think investment bankers are listening to our podcast?
No, I don't think they are. A girl can dream, you know?
That was very optimistic of you, Maxine.
Former recovering investment bankers that are now starting companies, maybe.
Maybe.
But I don't think there's that many investment bankers that are starting it. But if you have a mate who is an investment banker who really hates their job and is thinking of their next thing to do,
just incept this into them next time you're at the bar.
Yeah, please. Or you could just play my voice on repeat, making this request of them in the background so it can kind of get into their ear. Whatever you need to do, we'd just love to see that business. Many of those businesses started. That would be great.
We also saw what I think is a increase in the like first checks and interest in angel investing. I know that you didn't necessarily see that. So like maybe we can compare notes on that one.
Yeah. I mean, I think in the US, there were less investors. In 23, there was just over 15,000 active investors in the market. In 24 so far, there has been just over 11,000 active investors, which is a pretty material decrease. But as I mentioned before, right, round valuations are up, round numbers are up, total round size is up. So it's kind of like the story there is less investors, but more active and deploying more, which I thought was interesting because, yeah, I agree. It seems like in Australia, there's more.
In Australia, like I'd say we're seeing the opposite. We're seeing more investors coming into the market, more angels, the interest in angel investing, people writing their first checks is an all-time high.
Love to see it.
Yeah, the data that we have suggests that the number of checks is increasing. And if anything, investors are writing smaller checks and increasing like number of checks that they're writing, which I think actually just points to like a maturing ecosystem because people are starting to understand portfolio theory better, which is a good thing. But yeah, I think we're seeing the opposite, like more angel activity than ever before.
Incredible. Are you taking accountability for forcing people to do learning checks? I love to hear that there's more diversification. People are like taking into account portfolio theory. That is music to my ears.
I think we can both take a little bit of responsibility on that one. Credit?
Yeah, I'll count it. I will take credit for that.
Yeah.
That is awesome to hear.
I think we coined learning checks. So yeah.
Maybe in Australia. I don't think outside of Australia we coined learning checks. Or are we just like trademarking it?
No, we coined it. I'm calling it.
We coined it.
You heard it on this podcast. You heard it here first. At least you heard it here first in Australia. Probably New Zealand. Probably APAC.
Just keep expanding the circle. APAC, you know.
Commonwealth.
This half of the country. That's really exciting to hear that there's more learning checks going on. I would definitely say anecdotally, I am seeing more angels out there. And also really excitingly seeing more high value add kind of operator angels. There's a couple of them that are really kind of coming to the fore that I'm starting to see in a lot of deals. So that's really exciting to see because I think it's a really important feeder into a very healthy ecosystem, right? Like experienced angels deploying actively, either they graduate to fund managers or they stay as active operator angels. Either of those versions I think are really excellent. Actually, both, if I'm asking, both for the ecosystem, I think is really, really excellent to see.
I think we also saw a marked increase in the quality of angels and the bar. Like, I think we set out as part of this podcast at the start of the year to raise the bar on angel investing. I don't know if we can take credit on that, but I would say, like, anecdotally, that the bar on angel investing or early stage venture has been raised a little bit this year. I absolutely think that that's the case. You know what is not on our list, though, that I think we probably should mention? We did see a lot more of, like, egregious, not so great, not so founder friendly terms this year.
True.
Let's just, like, take a moment to riff on that. What was the worst, most egregious term you saw this year?
Oof. I saw the impact of the one that I will beat this drum all day. I think expiry dates on safe notes are just the worst, like the absolute pits. For context, what an expiry date on a safe note requires is that you can convert your safe note into a priced round on the expiry of that expiry date. And so
at the val cap, right?
At the val cap, yeah. And there's no, you know, safes don't have any prescribed terms. So you essentially leave up to a negotiation all of those kind of like additional terms and rights around preference shares that would go into those shareholder agreements to the price round. And so these dates are like 24 to sometimes 36 months after the safe note. So you can imagine if a company is still alive and still operating 24 to 36 months out, unless they are, you know, they're just like riding off into the sunset with a highly profitable company, which is very unlikely, they're probably like struggling to survive. And so you force them to do an expensive conversion in the middle of when they're trying to struggle to survive. And I just think it is predatory and crap. So that was my one for this year. I hate them. I wish I didn't see them anywhere ever again.
Interesting. I didn't know that you felt so strongly about that, actually, because I've seen that several times and I didn't think that it was that egregious, to be perfectly honest. And I can explain one situation where, like, we see it quite often. But I'm interested because I never really considered if it does convert, then, like, what are the terms it converts under and, like, who decides that? I guess in my mind, it was just it converts at this whatever shareholders agreement they have currently, then those terms remain and it just converts. And you're saying that's not the case. You then have to go negotiate terms in the shareholders agreement?
Right. Well, very often those existing shareholders agreements don't have any preference shares in them. So they've got no rights or any expectations around pref shares. And so you very often have to enter into whole new standing documents.
Interesting. Did not know that. Here's one of the issues, though, and this is what we probably really need to fix this in Australia, because if you want to claim ESIC, you have to actually own shares.
Yeah.
And so there is a situation where it arises quite often. And I know several investors in the ecosystem that ask for a option to convert their safe note into shares at a certain time before a new financial year if the company is likely to no longer qualify as ESIC, because by getting it ESIC, then like the benefit on exit is so much greater. So even if you convert at the val cap, that might be slightly higher or lower, like you might be slightly worse off by converting then instead of at the round in the next 6 months. But because you've done that, you've now qualified for ESIC, which means it's exempt from capital gains tax on the exit. And so I've seen a number of safe notes that have that clause in there that say, hey, we want the ability to elect to convert before a new financial year if it's a possibility, or if it looks like you're not going to qualify as ESIC in the next financial year. And to me, that one made a lot of sense. I'm like, that scenario makes sense. But it's also why Australia needs to fix the fact that ESIC doesn't qualify for a safe notes.
Right. Yeah. It really, I mean, it feels like an inelegant solution to a problem that should be like better solved by giving clarity on the ESIC legislation. But I agree. Like, I can totally understand.
Oh, it does give clarity.
Yeah, true.
There is clarity. It specifically says convertible notes don't only qualify when it actually converts. So there's clarity. It's just the wrong clarity.
It's the wrong clarity.
It's the wrong clarity. Well, my most egregious term is 8X liquidation preference.
Stop it. What?
I didn't sign that.
No. But like, why in God's name did the founders sign that?
I don't know if the founders signed it. I think they might have walked away, but I'm just saying that's the worst I saw.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. That is egregious.
I have another one.
Spill the tea. Go for it.
One more. Yeah, one more, and then you can comment on to that one too. A 2-year warrant for being able to purchase double the amount of shares at the current price.
Who from? like pref shares or common?
Pref.
So they would force them to do a whole new transaction, issue more shares and dilute everyone or just dilute the founders?
Dilute everyone, which is interesting because, of course, it's on a safe note. So then, like, not everyone in the round knows that this investor has that option.
Wow. The mechanics of that are just a disaster, I would imagine, right? Like,
right?
Yeah, man. I feel like the tide goes out and people try some like really hair-raising stuff. I will say in the data, we saw flat rounds are slightly up and down rounds are slightly up. So we're still seeing some of that kind of pain move through from the ZERP era.
Yeah. Did you have any portfolio companies do down rounds or extensions?
No, we are. Ooh, extensions. Do we have anyone do? I know those ones are a little bit murky because we had a bunch of people do like preempts. I would say across our portfolio, of which now is 23, and keeping in mind they're only, you know, it's 23 months old, there were a handful of rounds that were like what I would call messy. You know, they weren't just like straight up rounds. They were like piecemeal, even though all of them were up, but they weren't really positioned as bridge rounds. They were like positioned, they were like up rounds. And then like one of them did a like seed and then a seed plus, and then a, I don't even know what the, like tranche two of the seed plus, like the nouns got very messy, but they were great markups.
Messy is also a word that I think I would use to describe this year.
Yes. Oh yeah. Woof and messy would be my like two nouns for the year. So there was a lot of that kind of stuff. I'm probably shielded from it because we're at pre-seed. Seed was a pretty robust round this year. Series A continued to be the tough inflection point for founders to get through, right? I think between seed and Series A, the 36-month graduation rate between seed and Series A was 20%, which makes it a really, really tough graduation rate. Historical average is closer to like 30 to 40% just for kind of benchmarking, excluding the ZERP era. ZERP era was like 100%. No, I kid. It's not 100%, but it was very high. You know, I just think that we're still feeling like that is a long blast radius from the ZERP era, right? We're like 2 years out.
As a quick reminder to people, ZERP era means Z-I-R-P, which is zero interest rate period, which is the period during which there was zero interest rate. So just
love it. Jargon checker.
Yeah.
I was just complaining about the blast radius of the ZERP era, which I think is a interesting thing for us to talk about when we think about 2025, right? Obviously, we have had an election this year, a hotly contested election. That was a bumpy ride.
Wait, Maxine. We're not going risky yet.
No hot takes.
No hot takes just yet. We got one more topic on our list here. And I feel like it's a big one, so we can't really skip over it. AI just went on an absolute tear.
Man, it took it down. It was so hectic on the AI side of things. I started the year, I met six companies all in a row who had gone from idea to millions in revenue in less than 6 months. I saw that intensity of growth kind of come off a little bit over the second half of the year, but that dynamic was definitely around and well. Obviously, we had monster rounds. OpenAI raised another round. We have Anthropic out in market raising at the moment. So there's a lot of folks, you know, doing the rounds.
Monster rounds,
huge, which they're obviously kind of pulling up some of those averages. And most of the data I'm seeing, they're just having to like straight exclude those monster rounds because they anchor up.
They just like ruin the data.
But it was interesting coming into the second half of the year, right? There was a little bit more hand wringing when it came to AI. Actually, most recently, people talking about, you know, are we going to see the continued acceleration of the ecosystem?
Sorry, hand wringing?
Like doomsday vibe. Lots of people saying, you know, we think that it's not going to be as rosy as we thought it was going to be. Obviously, Sequoia came out with a restatement of their article in the earlier year, asking the question kind of like, how are we going to grow into these valuations?
Actually, though, I'm genuinely baffled by the number of people that have asked me in the last like 3 to 4 weeks on some sort of like a, hey, state of the market call. Like, oh, so do you think like AI is here to stay? Or like, is this a fad?
What? That is wild. Really? What are you saying? I am I share you in my baffledness. I am baffled that that is even a question.
I'm kind of flabbergasted when you say things like this, because I like, my response is generally like, yes, 100%. How could you think otherwise? Like, this is not a fad. This is not crypto, which also actually wasn't a fad, but like,
it's now back.
It's not back anyway. So it's now back. But like, I'm like, this is not NFTs. Like, if you haven't been using it to improve productivity in your life, then I question that, because we have literally gone through, or we are currently going through, the largest shift in human productivity due to this shift in platform. And the fact that like you're asking me whether it's sticking around tells me that either you are rejecting it or you haven't noticed how it's been subtly ingrained in integrated into your life in subtle ways. Like, for example, I think the best example I'd pull out is, you know, all of us have been using Loom for a while, right? We use Loom, we make these videos, we send them off. All of a sudden Loom was like, hey, here's some AI. Now we've removed silences from your videos. Now we've removed the like filler words. When I say like a lot, it just removed those for me, and everyone saved 1 minute of listening to me, because now my Loom video was 1 minute shorter because it didn't have all of those silences in it. But like, that is just, that was handed to us. And who doesn't say yes to that? And I'm sure you could name 10 other examples of that where AI has been put into your life and it has objectively made it slightly better. And you maybe not didn't even realize it.
100%. Yeah. I mean, I think like the applications that folks are already starting to see, I would venture a guess that most of the times that they're interacting or reaching out to customer service via like chat window right now, they're not interacting with a human and they probably have no idea. Right.
But I feel like that's been around for a while. Nobody's been interacting with humans with chat windows for a very long time. I think the shift that happened this year was it went from like, if this, then that, to actual AI.
I've got to say, if someone coded up the version of Stripe support that I got up until the middle of this year, and that was their if this, then that chatbot, like all of those engineers should have been fired. And then suddenly in the middle of the year, it was like, ta-da, it's actually like a conversational, helpful customer service experience. And so I'm guessing that that was AI that actually wasn't a kind of human interface. Interestingly, obviously, that is the obvious use case that we saw an enormous amount of capital flood into and an enormous amount of companies start. But I think kind of all over the shop, right? I did a hackathon with Annie and Build Club in SF in the middle of the year. And I was totally blown away by the pace at which the founders were able to build really valuable, useful products in the space of a weekend. And it was just like fun, people hacking stuff together. And so I can understand your like average person may not have used this yet or know that they're using it yet. But honestly, if you're on stage and they're asking you for like tech trends and then they're asking you for like, hey, does AI hang around? I would strongly encourage them to open their computer, open any app, literally choose any app and use the AI feature and then tell me it doesn't drive productivity for you. I'm probably using one of the models 25 to 30 times a day, driving like material or quality improvement in the task I'm trying to deliver in like 50% of those tasks. So I can't see a world where it goes away. I think the question is like, how impactful it's going to be. And I think that that's the presiding question we're kind of entering into 25 asking ourselves, which is like, how useful do we think AI is going to be in 2025? Which I wonder if now feels like, I've been chomping at the bit all episode, if now feels like a good time for hot takes for 25.
Yes, yes, hot takes. Let's get spicy, Maxine. Go for it.
Yes, let's do it.
So a certain someone became president again?
A certain someone, he that shall not be named. Yes. So we have Trump in presidency as of the second week of January again, with lots of promises that really impact the tech ecosystem, right? You are a fool if you trust everything that a politician says, but probably some of it will come to fruition, especially with Elon Musk as a kind of key wingman of Trump stepping into office. We can expect that, I think we'll see at least some of the promises come through. And some of those key promises are about liquidity back into the market, you know, unclogging the IPO ecosystem. I think in Q3, there wasn't a single tech IPO in the US, not one. There was 13 and they were all healthcare. And so there's a pretty significant backlog of unicorns and soonicorns that are trying to get kind of through that backlog. And that is a material amount of capital that's locked up. So I think we'll start to see liquidity back into the ecosystem. I think it will take a while, obviously, for the government to make those shifts that they'll need to make in order to unclog that system, and then obviously for those IPOs to start to move through. But I think even in anticipation of that, once the market assumes that that's going to be happening, you might see more liquidity happening for kind of pre-IPO funds buying pre-IPO stocks again and start to see that liquidity move through, which I'm super excited about. So my hot take is I think we will have a lot more liquidity.
Yeah, hot take. You got to get spicy. Like, give me some numbers here, Maxine.
Ooh.
How many IPOs do you think are going to happen next year?
I have no idea how many IPOs we do in any given quarter.
You got to get spicy. Come on.
I'm building into a spicy. I've got to build my spice.
All right, build.
So my built spice is I reckon we will see 40 IPOs.
40. All right. You heard it here first. Maxine's saying 40.
Tech IPOs, right? Not healthcare, but 40 tech IPOs in 2025.
And is that in the US?
In the US, yeah. Don't ask me how many we'll see in Australia. I'll cry.
I was just going to say, should we make a prediction? I mean, I can take a stab at it. How many? I don't even know how many we had last year. So
I don't think we had any. I want to say zero tech IPOs.
I mean, are we counting GYG?
That is not tech. What is technical about a burrito?
I mean,
tech-enabled burrito?
It was the most talked about IPO in 2024, so that's what I'm going with.
Not the same thing. Just not the same thing.
No. Yeah, I mean, we could go into the semantics of like, what is a tech IPO in Australia? Because technically you can list at a very, you know, small caps listing. So we'll come back to that. I'm going to call like maybe five. We'll have five next year.
Love it.
You can hold me to that one.
I think we're going to go back to bubble behavior, at least in AI. I think with the liquidity coming back into the market, it's maybe like a built hot take. But if we do see that liquidity come back into the market, I think we're going to scream back into bubble behavior. And we will have collectively forgotten a lot of the lessons that we learned like 2.5 years ago. So I think we'll start to see wild valuations for that kind of ignore a lot of fundamentals again, which will be great. Some wonderful founders will get backed with a lot of headroom to work it out. And I think we'll waste a bunch of money again in silly spaces.
I mean, objectively or theoretically, having Trump and Musk back in office could mean more free money for the ecosystem, which could be good for founders and investors in the short term?
No. Free money is not a good thing. In this environment, I do not think a bunch of free money is a good thing. It might be, sorry, that's very naggy girl of me. Short term, it will be very much appreciated by a lot of people. A lot of people have done it very, very tough over the last 2 years, right? In tech and outside of tech. If you look at the way that companies have performed in the US, both listed and unlisted companies, and you exclude from that the kind of top tech stocks, right? It's been a tough, tough couple of years, even though kind of overall the kind of major indices have all gone up. That's largely pulled up by the big tech stocks and the kind of NVIDIAs of the world. And so my fear, I fear free money because they might...
Well, everybody likes free money, Maxine.
They do. They love free money. And that's the problem, right? Is they love free money and then they go and spend it all and we get kicked back into this inflationary environment. And as a company trying to operate in a market after the free money has been absorbed into the market, you're just in a shit sandwich. Right? You are like being pushed on by your employees and pushed on by your suppliers to try and pass on increasing costs to you. And then you can't immediately pass on those increasing costs to your customer. And so, you know, any companies that are operating in that environment is really tough. Having said that, naggy girl over. My hot take is I think we will see mass adoption into companies of AI, because if we do see this inflationary environment happening, then companies will need to adopt AI in order to be able to get efficiencies to be able to survive in that dynamic. So I think we will see overarching some really exciting adoption and some like really cool applications in boring ass businesses of AI and like tech-enabled services within businesses.
Oh, hard agree on that. I think you're a bit negative on the like free money aspect. Like a lot of good things came out of the ZIRP era. Like, yes, they're created a lot of challenges, but like if we're going into another year where there's a little bit more free money and we keep the good things that we learned from the ZIRP era. And I mean, I think you're being a bit negative about how we're all going to forget the lessons we learned. I certainly will not. And if we keep some of those good things, a little bit of free money, like this could be a really good thing.
I love it. What are you keeping? What's like in with the free money and out with 24?
I mean, definitely keeping the like headway to profitability, you know, not growth at all costs, and more sustainable companies in the sense of getting to revenue quicker. Definitely keeping lessons about bubbles and what bubbles look like. Absolutely keeping that as one of the lessons. And I think we're struggling on this last one, but like hype cycles, I learned like whatever lessons we learned from hype cycles, I think.
Something, something hype cycle, something, something.
Yeah.
If I'm choosing, and I'm not sure this is how investor psychology works, just for clarity, right? I like, if we could collectively keep the lessons.
In a perfect era.
Yeah, in a perfect era, keep the lessons of a hype cycle, but like bin deflationary environment that we go into post hype cycle, then like, I think we probably would have. But if I am choosing the things I want to keep in another kind of free money environment, if we step back into that in a kind of Trump presidency, the thing I really missed over the last few years was the thoughtful, considered optimism that was missing, right? In one of those deflationary environments, there was lots of people that were very short-termist, very kind of looking at just surviving this week, this month, this year, and projecting and predicting that it was going to like just be bad for a really long period of time. And I think that that's not true. I think that we're really early in Australian venture, and I think we have all the ingredients to be a really exciting ecosystem, both that accrues an enormous amount of value to our country through our technical innovation, but also to the world. And I think that looks obvious to me, but for lots of people just focusing on this year, like true, you're not going to deliver, you know, a generational company in a year. That is very difficult to do, if not impossible. So it's not going to happen. Right. And so
it's just not going to happen. You got to let go of that one.
Yeah. Not happening. My spicy take, you cannot build a generational company in a year.
So spicy, Maxine.
So spicy. what I would want to keep from a ZIRP era is just the optimism, like the belief and that of what can be built.
That anything is possible.
Mm-hmm. To some degree, it is, provided you pick the right problem and you wrap it with the right resources.
All right.
My spicy take is that I think that we will get free money and then we will get all of the associated downsides on the other side. So make hay while the money is free.
Well, there isn't free money yet. We're just predicting that I think there will be more free money in the short term. Other predictions. What are we predicting for 2025? Actually, one bet. There's a fun bet going on. I don't know if anyone has heard this, but there is a fun bet going on between some of the like billionaires in the US about when, and I'm guessing when they mean like a month and a year, when there will be the first one person company valued at over $1 billion. So like only one person working at the company. So Maxine, what's your bet?
Oof. I don't think that will happen in 2025.
Ever?
No, just in 2025. Aren't we making predictions, spicy takes for 2025? I don't reckon we'll see that in 2025 because you need to build the enterprise value and then someone needs to value it, i.e. they need to buy it.
All right. Well, then my spicy take is that I think it will happen in 2025, probably late 2025, like September, October, but I think it will.
Amazing. Oh my God, I cannot wait to do a retro on these spicy takes at the beginning, at the end of this of 2025.
You're going to be like, you were wrong, Cheryl. We're not even close.
Or you were so right and there is someone living the dream as a one-person billionaire out there in the ecosystem.
What about highest valuation? Do you think it will be an AI company next year?
Yes, I do think it'll be an AI company. I think it'll be one of the models, right? I think like one of the foundational models will take out the top prize, and I think it will be OpenAI. I think that they will continue their lead. As much as I want a little bit more parity across those models, I think it's like they have a big enough lead that it is very likely that they will maintain that lead, if not accelerate that lead, and command an associated valuation, which actually implies that they will also raise more capital because that's the only way that they're going to get repriced.
I'm going to call it now. I think that there will be a high-profile AI company collapse next year.
Oof, that is a spicy one. I think you're right.
Yeah, It's going to happen.
I think you're right.
It's going to happen.
Right. I agree.
There's just no way that we go through the next year without a high profile collapse. And I guarantee it's going to be in a pretty big AI company.
Very spicy. Very, very spicy. Will we have AGI in 25? Or what Dario Amodei is calling very powerful AI? So essentially like an AI that is capable of like Nobel Prize level thinking.
You know, I have been reading and seeing some data that suggests that we're hitting a little bit of a plateau. And I think maybe that's where some of these baffling questions have come from. they might be reading some of the same things. So I'm going to go no. I think that's still a little ways away. And we're likely to see a bit of a plateau over the next 3 to 6 months in AI capabilities. Like, we made leaps and bounds this year. And like that level of acceleration, while possible, I think we're probably likely to see a bit of a plateau this year.
Spicy. I reckon we're going to see a significant acceleration. It's not going to come from, like, I think that like individualization and personalization and like the use cases on top of it, that's where we're going to see the acceleration. But from the day-to-day, like us standard users, we will experience a significant acceleration. So my hot take is I think I'm going to be using AI in 50% more of my tasks on a day-to-day basis.
You already use it quite a bit.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to be using it in 75% of my tasks on my day-to-day basis. Everything from phone calls through to how I do my email to how I diligence companies, right? I think like 75% of my tasks, it will touch and concern AI.
I'm not sure if I'm arguing about that. I think that's probably true. What I'm saying is that the learning capability of these models and their ability to actually like reach that, what is it, super intelligence or
AGI.
Yeah. I think that is still a ways away. And it seems like we haven't made significant like improvements from like ChatGPT-4 and to the next model up. Did I say it right that time?
You said GTP.
Fuck. ChatGTP? GPT?
GPT.
GPT, chat GPT.
Incredible. Incredible. I'm so glad we unearthed on this podcast that you have spent the last 24 months referring to it in this.
PGT?
I couldn't be happier about it. This is my highlight for 2024.
Oh, man. All right. So we need to make a prediction about the amount of venture capital that will be deployed in Australia in 2025. We're definitely on track to at least surpass 2023 for 2024. My guess is that it will land somewhere around that $4 billion mark for this calendar year. My thought around where we might land for 2025 is probably around the, I'm going to say 5.1.
I agree. I think we're going to go up. Hey, this is a spicy call segment, so I'm going to go 6.
Okay. Are we doing Price is Right rules?
Oh, no. I think that is like, this is wrong before I even say it. Because my other spicy take is I think it's going to take LPs a while for their sentiment to adjust to the new market dynamics that we're in. So I actually think we will see, even though the market is hotter than it has been for 2 years, I think we will see LP sentiment, so like institutional sentiment and multifamily office sentiment, be cooler than it's felt for the last couple of years. And the reason for that is because I think it will still feel locked up. So I actually think we're going to go backwards in terms of total capital deployed into the Australian ecosystem.
Wait, so you went from going above me by a billion?
Yeah. It's complete revision. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What? Well, I don't know what to do with you right now, Maxine.
So I reckon we're going to go backwards. I'm going to go 3.9.
All right, pick 3.9. Okay. But 3.9, oh, okay, so if we end up doing 4 this year, then you think it'll be at 3.9. Wow, you are pessimistic. I'm like, we can't be friends anymore.
Who are you today? I am fairly confident I am going to regret that prediction, like, pretty much the moment that we end this podcast.
I'm holding it to you like,
but
you
know, it's got to be spicy. It's got to be spicy.
You don't get to go. You do not get to go back to 6 when we're doing this a year from now. Absolutely not. Okay. Well,
no, I live and die by my predictions.
Any other predictions you want to call out or ask about?
I think I'm going to reintroduce our extremely vanilla prediction from last year.
Oh, God.
Which is extremely unspicy. But just to like end on a whimper, I think that we will see appetite actually slowly rebuild over next year. We will see slight increases across all metrics.
What? Maxine.
And it will be a good year.
I love you.
Happy 2024, everyone.
And that's a wrap, everyone. Okay, bye.
Hi, I'm Lucy.
I'm Kerry, and welcome to Mumbition the podcast. We chat with incredible women sharing the hilarious, messy, and brilliant truth about mixing motherhood and chasing dreams.
Because building a business while building Lego empires, not always easy, but definitely possible.
So grab a coffee, probably reheated, tune in, and join our community of women who get it.
Mumbition, the podcast for mums daring enough to do both unapologetically.
Available now, wherever you squeeze podcasts into your day.